How many men will tell all that nerd shit wrapped up in a neat little bow? DC Toy Power and Pokemon Go, the blazing defender for sure. Don't you dare change that channel, we've got breaking the panel. We are the Giant Size Team Up, nerd is what we know. If you want geeky podcasts, well, there's nowhere better to go. Oh, yeah, and Botch Podcast.
This is why Disney has to be stopped and Netflix must survive, because this is the heart of fandom right here, man.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel. Everything that is awesome and not Captain America Switchback, because we knew it was going to happen anyway. Spoiler alert! Show about comic book stuff. I'm the Rock God of Podcasting, Charles McFall, along for the ride, and one of our most valued members in the GSU community, Chris Wisdom.
You are so old. So very old.
You know, I don't even know how old you are, man. How old are you?
Not as old as you. Happy birthday, old guy.
Thank you.
And maybe a couple more.
I have not made rockdom status yet. I have not had the world fall at my feet, so I'm going to keep on going until that happens. So you're talking 800, 900 years, I'm down. I'm down for that. Bionics will come out. Brian Dunaway's idea of at some point technology will be, because, you know, there's Star Trek has beaming technology, right? But that's not how people would really use it. He wants to use it for just beaming the poop out of our bodies into space. That's what it's going to be used for. And I'm down for that, man. I don't even have to stop to go to the bathroom. Let's rock. So the man, the behind the myth and the legend, Paul Klotz.
Yeah.
I don't know why that was so funny, but it was.
Because my hands are in the air triumphantly. You can't see it at home, but they are.
I love the meme my wife showed me the other day. It's like, I did not give birth to the roof, but I will raise it. It's a good one. The picture was great. It was good. I want to start off this episode, speaking of birthdays, I love Frank Allen. Not just because I was able to be the first special guest from GSTU on Toy Power. That will be airing soon. Check out the GiantSizeTeamUp.com for the Toy Power logo and listen to their show. Subscribe everywhere. But because in his birthday wishes today, he gave me one of the best presents ever. He took the Transformers. He put Paul Klotz's and Chris Wisdom's head on the Transformers. Frank, I love you. Now, that being said, I got a little tidbit. Here's a little leak, a little preview of something that happened on Toy Power, because they haven't released it yet. So here's a little sneak peek. Mrs. Allen, we love you so much, because Frank's wife, when he went to get into podcasting, she's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, you know, like that thing I do with breaking the panel, I send it a segment, and, oh, yeah, whatever, sure, go ahead and do that. Then he gets into the car a couple weeks, maybe a month later, and all of a sudden Paul Klotz's voice is coming through the speakers like, hey, where's Paul Klotz? What is it? She goes, oh, yeah, I love breaking the panel. She listens to us and won't listen to Toy Power. So we love you. You're our favorite. Keep up the good work, and you're awesome. So I just wanted to throw that out there. All right, guys. You know my stickler, salty old man BS that I pull about not watching trailers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just has been around. Travis Jones, I think, has gone through a whole box of Kleenex over this trailer. He just cannot shut up about it. Carl Dodge, Mike Woodard, everybody's talking about this thing. So I was like, fine, I'll go look at the new Punisher trailer. Oh, my God, I'm 13 again. Effing Metallica and Punisher. Are you kidding me? I was so pumped. I mean, I'm like fist pumping in the air. And, oh, my God. That trailer, though, man. Oh, my God. Right? Give me an amen. Somebody.
Did,
come on.
Did it make you climax?
No, it definitely turned me into a 13-year-old, "Ooh, yeah, man," kind of guy for a second. It was embarrassing. I was glad I was not doing.
Can you please not bring up 13-year-olds after I say the word climax? I don't want sound bites taken out of context, Charles.
Fair enough. I'm just glad I wasn't doing one of those videos where, like, Charles reacts to the trailer to try to get, you know, promotion or GSEU feed and all that. Because I was like,
you didn't want to show everybody your vinegar strokes.
that trailer, seriously though, genius, genius.
I think the big thing to call out with that trailer is its exceptional weaving of Metallica 1 throughout the video. You know, it starts with the intro, which is obviously pretty low-key for anybody who's familiar with the song. I mean, it's one of the most iconic metal songs of all time. And it was just, it was amazing.
Yeah.
I definitely had some mahogany going on.
Here's the obligatory name drop. I've got to hear that song live in concert. Metallica, friend of the show.
No. Napster!
I am.
Napster! Napster!
I'm one step away from James Hetfield. I'm just saying.
One giant leap away from James Hetfield. Okay.
A whole size leap, but a leap that could be.
All right. Let's go over the things that he has that you don't have. One talent. I'm saying like
Kevin Bacon, 6 degrees of separation. I know somebody who knows him. Not that it matters, because he would not give me the time of day.
You know, Charles, if there was a name drop in the Olympics, like an event in the Olympics,
yeah, man,
you might gold. Yeah, you might slam that home.
But yeah, you're right though. With the going back to the trailer, that it starts off slow.
Was I right when I said that you didn't have any talent?
Yeah, that's,
yes,
absolutely.
Okay. No. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh man, when the clicking of the rackings of the guns and the clips lock again and timed with the music. Oh my God, Chris, tell me you didn't cry little boy tears going, "I'm so happy that at this moment."
I was, and then I was firmly brutalized by Mrs. Castle's appearance and then disappearance. Oh. Oh, that's what he's mad about. I get it.
You do that right, though.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. But it's completely different seeing what they did versus, you know, what happened to her in the comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty. That was good. That was good. That was some Usual Suspects type violence right there.
When this show hits, it's going to be meme central of this is Disney, you know, because one, people forget that Disney owns Buena Vista Pictures, which does lots of violent adult oriented type films, you know, rated R films type of deal, and some other companies like that. But yeah, dude, this is done right. This is done great. My favorite part is in the middle of the trailer. I'm honestly, as much as a fan of the Punisher am, I'm not that familiar with the tech guy that is his partner. But so I don't know his name or anything like that. But when he says, we're aiming for the same goal, let's take him down together. He's like, yeah, but one thing, I gotta kill them all. He goes, yeah, I can live with that. I'm so happy. I'm so happy right now. Show's over. I'm good. I'm happy.
Well, so there's been a couple things that have come out about the new season of Punisher. One, Marvel/Netflix have been emphasizing that it is not tied to Defenders at all.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's its own unique story, so that's relevant. And we got to see a lot of that there. That it's definitely... It kind of reminded me in a way of... I guess I would say maybe... Jessica Jones and how it's clearly gonna have like
ties to the universe,
some depth to it.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I thought you were going a different direction. My bad.
Yeah, no.
Depth is
Don't put words in my mouth, Charles.
What can I put in your mouth, Klotz?
No, none of that. That's what Frank Allen is for. You've already expressed your love for him today. I want you to hop on a plane and fly all the way to the down under.
I would totally do that. Just to turtle him really, really good. I don't even know what that means, but it means something, I'm sure. No, so but it is tied to the universe because we saw, and again, I'm bad with the names, but the redhead reporter from Daredevil, she made
Karen Page.
Thank you, Karen. You see her for a good second and a half in the trailer. So she definitely is going to be a tie in there somehow. So it's going to be clearly tied to the universe without being directly tied to the events of, well, we know Defenders, but do you think it won't be tied to the events of anything but Daredevil Season 2, maybe?
I mean, just as a leaping off point, I think. I think they're going to try to... I feel like they realize that Punisher has a potential to outlive the merge storyline of the other four shows. So they're going to try to let it be its own thing.
So follow me here. See if you agree or disagree. I know you're almost automatically going to disagree. But I might make a point here that the regular being Defenders, Luke Cage, Daredevil, blah, blah, blah. The regular Marvel shows on Netflix feel a little bit in the same theoretical vein as CW's Flash or Arrow, whereas Punisher feels like Narcos or Breaking Bad is not the one I was thinking of, but Breaking Bad, but more violent. Is that darker, grittier thing, which needs that separation.
Is Breaking Bad not violent enough
for it you? Wasn't what I was thinking of. It's a new one on Netflix I was trying to think of with...
Ozark?
Yes, Ozark, yes. And I couldn't...
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard things.
Yeah, basically I've heard if you love Breaking Bad, go here. It turns up the volume on the darkness and violence. But yeah, so it feels like the Punisher, again, can have its own... I'm with you. That it'll be... It lives in its own vein of that niche of dark, gritty violence, and we'll get an audience that, let's just be honest, Iron Fist could not pull the same audience.
Mm-hmm. Any audience?
No. Apparently, Gata liked it. Carl's wife. Apparently, that's her favorite is Iron Fist. It says a lot about Carl. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that he needs to go to the gym. Love you, Carl. Not really.
Get a giant dragon tattoo.
Oh, yeah. I honestly don't know if tattoos are against his religion, but if they're not, we should absolutely make him do that.
I mean, sure.
Because God's like, I don't care. Let's vandalize his body. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Now, file this under... Yeah, no, we saw that coming a million miles away. Inhumans is already canceled. Yeah. What's up, man? What's going on there?
I don't know, man. It seems like Jeff Loeb has no idea what we're talking about. It could not suffer the weight of the bad press that it's getting. There was just no way. They knew they weren't going to be able to turn this around after the IMAX release. You know, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, and for similar shows doing these type of deals, an IMAX initial release into a television show, the money it made in IMAX was not bad in comparison, but you still, when you look at how much they spent to put this in IMAX and do all that crap, it was definitely not worth the money, plus the reviews, man. And it's not just professional reviewers that are saying that, it's people that, you know, average Joe went in and saw it and was like, yeah, this is pretty much as bad as we thought it was going to be. And that's not good for
right.
them.
And the only shows I can think of off the top of my head that did that were major IP, you know, intellectual properties. I was about to say IP properties, but I realized this is being redundant. The major IPs, which were Doctor Who, did a couple years ago, they did a special one or two episode release during Dragon Con, just like Inhumans, during Dragon Con in IMAX. And, I mean, that was already been out. Obviously, besides the original run of Doctor Who that went on for however many years, the new version of Doctor Who had already been out for 4 or 5 years and had a massive following, and then they did it. And they didn't do super great with the IMAX tickets. And I think the other one was Sherlock, again, being a really huge IP, that massive fandom, and it didn't do that great. And I don't know of any others, if you guys can think of them, but it's... Why? Why would you do that?
Who wants to watch a TV show on IMAX?
I know, right?
With the cost involved and everything, like, why? It's one thing... Yeah, and I say that, it's one thing if you were watching something like Planet Earth in IMAX, sure. You know, if you recall that, because that was shot in, you know, really, that was cutting edge high def at the time. You know, it was the best stuff
ever.
Yeah,
it was gorgeous.
You know, and I just realized that was about 10 years ago.
Yeah, not right.
Yeah. Or,
yeah, but, you know, something like that, sure, because then it's an educational endeavor. I mean, you can run it in IMAX and, like, schools will go to it, and, you know, you can make your money, for sure, but just a run-of-the-mill comic book TV show when there's a gajillion comic book TV shows right now? No. And it's not even a good one. Like, it looks terrible. I hope that I have to eat crow on that, by the way. I know I always say that when I dump on something real hard. I hope I'm wrong. I sincerely do. I'd like Inhumans to be great. But I feel like we're inevitably going to run into the situation where it is as bad as we all think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so this has not been officially corroborated, right? This is just conjecture based on the fact that they're promoting it as a complete series.
Yeah, basically they're extrapolating from it, but
right.
I mean,
yeah.
If for network television, probably I would agree with you, but like say Game of Thrones, and I'm not talking Game of Thrones now because of course you would go see that, but I think Game of Thrones, a show like that. Possibly, that probably could have gotten away with an initial release in IMAX. Now, you wouldn't have had... No, I think you would have probably had enough recognition from people that were cognizant of the books, but I think you could have gotten away with an IMAX release of that initial two episodes plus. But, I don't know, it was... There's just so many missteps throughout the progression of this show's development that it seems like it was always just being waited. It just a matter of when the abortion was going to happen. Unfortunately, it was very late term. So,
well, we're going to get letters for that analogy.
Send it to show.
I never get hate mail. Send it to me.
BTP at giantsizedteamup.com.
I promise we won't even poo-poo on it. We'll just read it.
And we'll laugh. No, that's fair. Chris is Chris. That's it. So the thing is, the guy is Anson something or other, I think, that they got to be Black Bolt, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did watch Hell on Wheels for a number of episodes in the first season as a... Are you? That's the right show, right? You're laughing because I got something right, or
no? Sorry, I stifled.
Oh, okay. I don't get stuff right that often, but come on, man, that's not cool.
No, sorry, man, my bad. We're live. We're doing it live.
But I liked him there, but seeing him as Black Bolt, I went. I honestly hate when geeks use this, especially when Chris Wisdom uses it. But I went. Hashtag not my Black Bolt. It just doesn't resonate. And then of course Chris, rightfully so, going off the deep end a week or two ago, when they cut Medusa's hair. They cut her hair. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that? And
which come to find out is based on one of the more recent Inhumans runs in the books.
No, and it's true, and that's what I was saying is like, but it's just like the Flashpoint. Sorry, yeah, go ahead, sir.
No, I was just going to say, but that's not where you should be starting the story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, for many people, this show is going to be their first introduction to the Inhumans. I mean, outside of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., not really Inhumans. I mean, the Inhuman Royal Family, the original characters from the 90s and then going forward, you know, it's a big first step for a lot of people, and you have a chance to take... that royal family, these core characters, and make them Hallmark characters, and you're not going to, because you're going to stifle them by keeping them in this really ridiculously bad show. I'm sorry to be so negative on this show. I just don't see... I'll watch it, but I don't see it going well. I feel like it's going to be a train wreck and a half, and I'm probably going to groan considerably while watching it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This whole Inhuman thing has just... been misused. I have never seen a time when the Inhumans of any shape or form, and granted, my limited knowledge of comic books to be considered here, But my whole exposure to the royal family specifically and in humans in general is that they're powerful. And they're actually, the reason people worry about them is they're almost more powerful than many of the superheroes that are out there. Because it's not like the mutant gene where there's a test and blah, 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 blah. And you know, not everybody's an inhuman shows it. And their powers can be easily trained and hidden, and they blend in. They're almost like CIA operatives. And then Black Bolt, seriously. Black Bolt and Medusa. Well, and, yeah.
The mechanics behind the Inhumans is that when they go through Terrigenesis, every single Inhuman's Terrigenesis process is unique. Like, there's no way to predict what powers they're going to have. You know, as we saw in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., some come out looking horrific. Some come out just looking normal and having crazy strong powers. Black Bolt being one of those that has crazy strong powers. He's considered, like, top-tier meta power in the Marvel Universe because his voice can destroy things, like just completely savage everything, which is why he's silent all the time, which is why casting for him is so freaking important, because he's got to be this strong, brooding character the entire time. That's one of the reasons why casting him outside of the mask initially is, or like showing him outside of the mask initially is a huge problem as well, because a lot of his gravitas is based on his look early on. And it's like you come to respect him because he is this presence. You know what I mean? He's got his mantle on, if that makes any sense. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. So, and I feel like you lose that when you look like a, you know, Thursday evening primetime cheesy, you know, sci-fi show villain. And that's what he does.
Yeah.
And I do emphasize villain because he doesn't really look like a hero either, which is not the point, because that's the other thing is Inhumans aren't, they're not the shiny, happy, you know, super team. It's different. It's very different. You know what I mean? Some of them are shiny and happy, and some of them are pretty dark. And, you know, I think that's what people gravitated to that became fans of Inhumans. And I think that's what you have to capture. And they didn't capture that at all.
Yeah. And I think I don't necessarily have an issue with what it looks like they were trying to do with some of the story and try to do that Marvel thing and bring a current issue to light. They were going to deal with racism in this show, and they were going to do it from a perspective of, you know, a small minority population and why it's bad for them to insulate themselves, not accept outsiders, and try to put themselves above others. And they were going to give Maximus that role of trying to say, hey, I don't have these powers that you guys have. You've got to stop treating me like a second-class citizen, and all these other people that are your subjects, stop treating them like second-class citizens. Just from what I've seen and from what I've read, that's one route they were going to go. Or that's at least part of the route they were going to go. My problem with Medusa's hair is I feel like early on in production, they realized themselves that they couldn't get the hair to work with the budget they had. They couldn't make it look right. So it's not about them coming from a place of earnestness when they decide to tackle that storyline. It's them going, what's the quickest way we can not deal with her hair? Oh, we'll cut it off in the first two episodes. And that's why I find it so groan-worthy that the DCEU is looking to jump to Flashpoint so early on in his existence. Because they're not doing that out of a place of honesty. They're doing it reactionary because, and maybe I'm wrong, but this is the way I feel, is they're doing it reactionary because they've gotten so much bad press. They don't feel like they can get this right. And this is their mulligan. This is their in-universe comic book mulligan to use. And I would love to see a Flashpoint movie, but I'd like to see it used honestly. I would like to see the progression get to there, not used as a scapegoat. But
yeah, I agree with that, and I feel like this is just misusing the Inhumans even further, in particular the Inhuman royal family. Keep in mind, this concept is supposed to be a film. Could you imagine if this had been the product of an actual film treatment? Yeah. It never would have been, because, I mean, that's probably part of why it never came to light. I would imagine. I'm betting that during development they realized that they were going to have a really tough time with this particular slice of the Marvel Universe, but there's still potential to tell stories there. You just have to go about it in a different way.
Let's jump off what you just said about abusing it even further, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., as we know, was set up to lead into the movie property. And then Marvel got Spider-Man bumped, originally bumped Inhumans back and then canceled it for movie to make it for TV. Which really hurt Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I thought the first season that they started doing Inhumans, intriguing, fun, a whole separate people that doesn't care about regular humanity. They care about their own survival. And they hide, but they'll hurt who they have to hurt, and blah, 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 and they're looking out for their own. And that just, it went sideways so fast, and they did abuse it. And then they killed off some of their best freaking characters. I just have no hope. I have no hope for this show. Like you said, Klaus, I'll watch it because I'm an addict of Marvel, and it's what we do for the show as well. But maybe going in with such a low bar, they'll surprise us. That's the upside to them.
I mean, it'll be a slam dunk if we get 3-4 episodes in and realize that this is actually something good and that those first couple episodes aren't indicative of the entire product, but I don't expect that to be the case. Logic would dictate that the first couple episodes are what they had the most time and focus to, you know, they had the most time to build for and the most focus put into it because they knew it was going to be an IMAX. They knew that this was going to essentially be like a movie release, and here we are. You know what I mean? There's been no praise for this. I have not seen a single article, a single review, nothing that's like, oh, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Like, this is going to be so good. No, nothing. Not a single article out there that says anything like that. All we have is Jeff Loeb telling us to get off his damn lawn because we don't know what we're talking about. I mean, that's it. And it's like when I've always found that when somebody who's like a showrunner like that doubles down that hard publicly, they're full of it. I mean, that's exactly what happened with Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a director who was like, there's only going to be one cut. And then here we are later.
Can't control.
And there's two cuts. I really feel like I'm actually, this expands my concerns for the wider Marvel universe on ABC television. I'm worried about the stuff on Freeform. You know, I'm worried about Cloak and Dagger. I'm worried about New Warriors. I'm worried about, you know, all the different things that they're working on, because this could all get this treatment. This half-assed, you know,
bombed. We're gonna cut budgets or cut production on all these other shows because Inhumans bombed. That would be the worst to me.
Right. You know, and that's the thing, is it's like, and they're not going to be on the main network either. They're going to be on fringe networks. So I'm really, really concerned about how this whole thing plays out.
To be honest, Fringe has worked for Marvel so far. I mean, the decisions they made with Peggy Carter, Agent Carter, was bad, in my opinion. It wasn't a horrible show, but they made bad decisions and then ultimately canceled it. S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has struggled. Both those main network. Netflix has done well. Legion did really well, and I would consider FX being somewhat of a fringe network. Not super fringe, but you have to have cable, right? You have to go looking for it. It's not on the mom and pop 5-channel broadcast stuff. So not fringe like Freeform, but
the thing is, we got to stop talking about Legion like it's a Marvel show.
You're fair.
It's one of those inspired, like, it's like those soundtracks that used to come out in the 90s that had no songs from the actual soundtrack. You know what I mean? Like, it's inspired by Legion. You know what I mean? But is it really that yet? Not so far. As great as that show is, I'm not taking a dump on it. I don't want to say that at all. It's just, you know what I mean? Yeah, so that's the thing, is like, in Netflix, I don't consider Netflix the fringe. I consider Netflix their home. That's where Marvel TV has been at its best. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was always just a cheesy tie-in, and we know it. It was the Marvel Avengers Alliance of TV shows. MAA, like, not. I know we always bring up this goddamn game that nobody can even play anymore, but that game was brought out to promote the first Avengers film. Its only intended purpose. They were going to have a couple months of content. Nobody expected people to play that game for almost 4 years.
Do a award-nominated show about it.
Yeah. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I don't think anybody realistically expected it to last more than 2 or 3 seasons at the most. It was meant to be a tie-in. And then we know that things got off the rails.
And humans took it off the rails.
We know that Marvel...
Because I hate to interrupt you, I do, because I know how much you hate that. But let's be honest. And humans took it off the rails. Because that first season led into Avengers perfectly. That second season led into, or even halfway through, or whatever, quarterway, whatever the measurement is, they led into Winter Soldier perfectly, and they came right back out of it. Oh, my God, right with the storyline.
That was actually one of the best melding of two worlds that I could possibly imagine.
Wow, look how that worked. Let's do this for a property we're not sure we're going to make 3 freaking years from now.
Yeah. And it was done so badly. The Kree looked so bad. Mm-hmm. The Inhumans were so lackluster. That whole thing with... Yeah, it's just... There was potential there. You know, there's lots of potential there, but... Yeah. It's just... Yeah. So I don't have a lot of faith in ABC handling Marvel very well right now. I have tons of faith in Marvel proper, and I have tons of faith in Netflix, even though quality has dipped a little bit. I really just feel like Punisher is going to be a return to form for them. So, you know, that's where I'm at on it.
Fair enough. Chris, what you got? Anything else?
No, that's it, man. I don't want to... I'm in Paul's boat. I don't want to be the guy that's just crapping all over this, because there's already one property that has, you know, gets most of my crap, and I can't diversify that.
He keeps it in these weird baggies, and like Dragon Con got weird, guys. Like, Chris always had this backpack on, and none of us knew what was in it, and now I know what was in it. Bags of poop he was saving for Zack Snyder. He's just gonna send him like a big old parcel post full of
So
this is what I think of you, dude.
Moving on to happier stuff, this is one of those times when it's like, boys, let's jump in the car, take a really quick road trip, because I need to drink at this bar. A Stranger Things bar popped up, and Netflix's response to it was phenomenal. I mean, it is phenomenal. I can read it, or who would like to read it? Because it's phenomenal.
I don't have it open anymore. I closed it. Oh, because it had something running in the back. You go ahead and read it, Charles.
Sorry. All right. So it's the title of the article is Netflix just sent the nicest cease and desist letter to unauthorized Stranger Things bar. And that's it's looking at the thing, man. They've got the couches and the alphabet wall with the lights. It's a pop-up bar. So it was a temporary thing anyway, a theme bar to see what happens. I would buy rounds for you guys to come hang out with me here. It's got an upside down table with all the egos and stuff on it. It's great. It looks like you're in the show. It's phenomenal. All the drinks are based off of stuff from the show. But here's the cease and desist. And it's in Chicago, right? So it's hard for us to get to. And the thing with pop-up bars is they're temporary anyway. And if it's successful, they'll do it again. But it stays on overhead, blah, blah, blah. So to the owners of the bar, this is Netflix. My walkie-talkie is busted, so I had to write this note instead. I heard you launched a Stranger Things pop-up bar at your Logan Square location. Look, I don't want you to think I'm a total wasteoid. I love how much you guys love the show. Parentheses, just wait till you see season 2. But unless I'm living in the upside down, I don't think we did a deal with you for this pop-up. You're obviously creative type, so I'm sure you can appreciate that it's important to us to have a say in how our fans encounter the worlds we build. We're not going to go full Dr. Brenner on you, but we ask that you please, one, not extend the pop-up beyond its 6 weeks run ending in September. That's important. We're coming back to that. And two, reach out to us for permission if you plan to do something like this again. Let me know as soon as possible that you agree to these requests. We love our fans more than anything, but you should know that the Demogorgon is not always as forgiving. Please don't make us call your mom. Thanks. And it's the director of Senior Council of Content and Brand IP for Netflix. And... oh my God, that's how businesses should be. You definitely have to control your IP, but you got to treat your fans right. And what I want to come back to is, number one, the lawyer said not extend the pop-up. So not a cease and desist. It's not shut it down now. It's not pay us. It's no, finish your planned run. We're cool with that. But if you want to do it again, just talk to us and maybe we'll work something out. This is why Disney has to be stopped and Netflix must survive, because... this is the heart of fandom right here, man.
And I like this is in direct juxtaposition to the Star Trek story that we talked about last year. Absolutely. That was one of the reasons that I put this in the show notes, is because this is a beautiful story about interacting with the fans in the right way. They didn't come too heavy. They just set their expectations, said, hey, man, you guys are fans, obviously, and we appreciate that, because at the end of the day, the fans are the important ones, because you're the ones that keep generating the revenue. But you got to play within the confines of what we want. Continue what you're doing for now, and then we'll talk about
this. And they made it relatable. They said, you're obviously creative type, so you understand why. But I was like, perfect, man.
Mm-hmm. And I really feel like this is like kind of like uncharted territory as far as like what they could drop the bomb on, yeah. And, you know, the cease and desist bomb on. So I don't know that. I imagine if he sent this email, he or she, because we can't actually see who sent it. If they sent it, that they're confident that they could defend their IP if they had to. But this kind of sends the message like, okay, well, you guys kind of stepped on our toes a little bit here. Not a big deal. You know, just don't do it again without permission, and, you know, make sure that you don't extend it or anything and try to, you know, take our kindness for weakness, basically. I appreciate that. Like, even from a professional perspective, it's reasonable to be like, we know that you've put a lot of time and money into this, I'm sure. Fill out your commitment and then just, you know, let us know and we can talk about
something. More than likely, legally, well, not more than likely, I know for a fact, legally they could at least get an injunction to stop you right now, which would hurt you. Financially.
And that's probably ultimately how they would win, is just be like, well, you're a pop-up anyway, so if we get an injunction on you for a couple of weeks, we destroy half your window of doing business. Job's done. You know what I mean? Noteworthy here that the manager of Emporium, who's responsible for the pop-up, Jared Saul, said, if Netflix were okay with us running the Upside Down project through the season 2 premiere and Halloween weekend, we would most definitely have continued this incredible party a little bit longer. It's been so much fun for us and fans of Stranger Things, and it has even introduced a show to new fans here in Chicago who weren't aware of the show before visiting the pop-up. But basically, the emphasis here is that there's really no hard feelings about it. I feel there's not really a mea culpa here, but like, it's just like, yeah, okay, cool. You know, they definitely implied that they respect the request to not extend it. That was a good move. So, you know, if you're planning on doing something based on a hot IP, make sure you have your P's and Q's minded and dot your I's and cross your T's.
Yeah, and
they left legally.
Speaking of which,
Chris and I have a forthcoming new show about Stranger Things. Yeah,
we did.
Yeah. if we spent over an hour coming up with our name, and it's really close to the name of this bar. So,
well, okay, so that's a little different.
It is, though, but it's like one of those things where it's like, I'm sure they spent a ton of time planning this stuff, and they're like, they probably opened that with like the friggin' letterhead and everything, like, you know what I mean, like, okay, we're okay. Whew. I know I would crap my pants a little if I hadn't that sitting in my mailbox. Be like, oh no, oh no, Big Daddy Netflix gonna come take his due.
Oh, but man, you would frame that too, though, right?
Oh God, yeah, right.
Oh yeah, totally.
Sorry, I killed the conversation because I just want to be cool like you guys.
It's just another week here at Breaking the Panel.
It's what people tune in for.
I'm like the little brother. It's like, me too, me too. And the big brother's like, yeah, we're going to stop talking until you get away. I'm telling Mom.
If that worked, we would have an opening on this show, Charles.
In this case, when I tell Mom, it's going to be Mrs. Allen, and she's going to call in and reprimand you boys.
Oh, don't tempt Chris. Let's not have another Travis's mom, okay? Because we know Chris likes to fake an Australian accent, and he's probably not above like getting real high with it.
On that note,
we're going to take that break that you know comes right in the middle of the show. Listen to all the awesome shenanigans and corporate shilliness that we're doing. And you know what? Tune in afterwards because we got some great new stories to talk about. Glenn, some Toys R Us stuff that you've probably heard a million things about. But we'll get back to that in just a minute. And we're back. And we got some great stuff to talk about.
From out of spit. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, see, we can have a sing along.
No, we can't. No. Now that I've met you in real life, no.
I still want to do.
Did you just start Backstreet Boys?
We're back. All right. Come on. No. I'm like, what do you mean?
We never finished Backstreet Boys.
Dude.
I know for a fact that every time Backstreet Boys has come on, Charles finishes. There's been a lot of masturbation jokes this episode.
Now, here's the interesting thing. I host karaoke, right? And, of course, women my age, it's nostalgia. They like it. The odd thing is when I'm in a college bar doing karaoke, and it's I usually do 90s-type playlists because I'm typically playing to bars within 10 years of my age. And the 19-year-olds are like, oh, play Backstreet Boys. I'm like, how the hell do you know who back? Okay, fine. And they're singing along, and it's like, it's whatever.
That? Because that shit is cool now.
I know, man.
We've come full circle, dude.
Yeah.
I remember being an angsty preteen / teenager who was like, screw those guys, and all the legions of women who liked them and stuff. Like, those guys are nerds. And I listened to rock and metal.
I listened to One by Metallica.
I had somebody I worked with one time. She's like, I don't know about that Metallica stuff. It just makes me think that I need to go sit in my room and smoke weed and smash my head against the wall. I'm like, what is wrong with you? The Metallica is deep.
That's when you like respond like, well, I mean, technically, if you were to smoke the weed, you wouldn't be bashing your head against the wall.
Yeah.
Probably just be chilling out.
But I did not understand that principle back then. I just went, yeah, because she listened to country. I was like, yeah, so, you know, I played.
Oh, my God. She listened to country, and she's talking about people bashing their head against the wall?
Like, well, let me play any song you listen to backwards and get my truck back and my dog back and my wife back. You know, that's an old joke, but it...
Boo on you. That joke is stale.
It was 1994. It was not stale then. Thank you.
I was going to say, it's plenty fresh to a 40-year-old, Paul.
I cannot wait till Casey comes in and replace you.
Man.
Does he know how old you are? Because he might not if he knew how old you are.
All right. So here's some interesting real-world stuff going on. Spider-Man. Comic books are expensive, right? Chris, you can actually bounce off of this story and go to the whole Superman story off of this, too. That'd be awesome. But we know number one issues are very, very expensive. An unnamed collector sent two of his rare comics, The Amazing Spider-Man number one and The X-Men number one, out for appraisal, right? And to honestly do that, you really should walk it into a store, but he sent it to a store to do it. And police say the Spider-Man was worth $11,000, while the lower-grade X-Men was only worth $1,000 due to his condition. But here's the thing. When the package came back from the comic book store, the comic book people took great security over it, made sure it was protected, nobody put their sticky little hands on it, sent it back to the owner's house in Brooklyn. It got left on the stoop, which for those of you who are not familiar with what the hell stoop means, in the South, it means your porch. It got left on your doorstep. It got left outside and stolen. So here's the thing, though. Most of these are not geniuses, right? And this guy called, of course, the owner called the comic book store to see if anybody was trying to offload it. He knew it had been shipped back. He knew it had arrived, reported it stolen. And it turned out, yeah, someone had been trying to sell these particular books, which obviously you don't know what you have because you cannot just walk into any comic book store because they want provenance, right? They want to know how you have an $11,000 comic book. And so they reported it. And then basically the police set up a sting and, done. He turned up to sell the package and was arrested. Like, holy crap. That's one of those.
Could you imagine the feeling if you were that scumbag? If you were that guy and you're like, I'm going to get $11,000. And then you see some silver bracelets waiting for you. You know what I mean? Like, just like, oh.
A happy story is he got the comics back, but like the shipping company, like how much does he own them right now? What are they doing to make this right? Because in this, it says the unnamed company. How long does it take? I would be like, my Twitter's locked and loaded and you're about to be named.
Siri, have you heard of Reddit? Because I have.
Hey, Siri, put in a reminder to put them on blast tomorrow.
Oh my god! And it's the day and age of that. A job like a story like this would go viral. And it reminds me of an old Mike Birbiglia joke when he was talking about trying to get a refund on a TV from a company that he could not name it. So he just threw out a fake name called Glamazon. And TV shipping issues and all that, and he said, you know, they weren't giving him good customer service, and he's like, hey, did you know that I write a blog and it has like 3 million subscribers? Do you think where I, you know, write funny stories about things that happen in my everyday life? Do you think this could be one of those funny stories? And basically the terms they came to were, yeah, we'll refund your money, but don't name us. Okay, Glamazon.
But so here's the thing about the shipping company. This is going to be one of those battles where either they just want to avoid any negative press, and so they'll pay them off and sign non-disclosures, whatnot. Or it'll be no, it's the comic book shop's fault. No, it's the shipping fault. Because think about it. When you go to ship something, you pick the level of security. Do they need to sign for it? Is there insurance on the package? Those kind of things. And those are details that are missing from the article that... if the comic book company didn't purchase the you have to sign for it thing, did I miss that part?
It did say that. In the story, it says that. Yeah, it's in the last... it is important to note that according to police, the appraisal services delivery company was supposed to get his signature. Instead, the unnamed company reportedly just dropped the package off without anyone signing, leaving the Primo package unsupervised. We know who the real villain is.
They do that all the time. I mean, that it's a real problem. Oh. My other favorite move is when they have a bunch of packages on one block and they fill out the "we missed you" slips ahead of time for everybody on that block, and they just go put them on the doors and drive away. Like, no, I need to sign for that, sir.
Okay. So, side note, this is a while back. I had ordered my first Apple laptop. It was the biggest purchase I'd made in my podcasting career at the time, and my physical life at the time. I mean, it was a $1,500 computer, and it hurt to buy it. And so I'm tracking it every single day. When they ship it. Okay, they shipped it. Now I've got the tracking number now. And I knew it was supposed to be out for delivery. I knew I was supposed to sign for it. I worked on the ambulance near my house. And so I had gone to my house to see if they'd come by the house, and they had not. Yeah, because I knew the rough time delivery window. And as I'm leaving my neighborhood, this is a nice winding road neighborhood, I pass the FedEx truck, which is how it is being delivered, on the way out. But, he's going to have my package. So let's turn around and go back to the house. So we find a place, because it's an ambulance, you can't just turn around the road, it's really big. So we find a place, we go up a minute or so, turn around, come back. As we're coming back through the neighborhood, he's leaving the area of my house. Like, it's only been a minute. Not even a minute. What the hell? And I get to my house, and sure enough, it was timed. I was still within the 60-second window of what he had written on the slip of "we missed you." So I flipped on those damn sirens and chased his ass down. I was like, "Oh, dude, you got my back."
Of course you did.
You're not even doing your job. There's no way you knocked on the door and waited. If you'd waited.
Wait. The guy flips on the lights and sirens of an ambulance to pull over a package delivery guy is going to tell somebody they're not doing their job.
That's right.
Okay, I'm trying to get the facts straight.
There's no way with my driveway the way it was that you stood at the door, because you knock. Nobody stands at the door and waits for people to show up, right? So you knock, you ring the doorbell, you give it a minute. Then you fill out the slip, which maybe takes another 30 seconds to a minute, and you stick it to the door. If he had done that, he would have been in my driveway when I pulled up. He was a good block and a half down when I passed him the second time.
Yeah, he's got to get to the next block to fill out all the ones for that block, too.
Ah, that chapped my butt. But you think, speaking of chapped asses, Chris, you've got a Superman story to tell about Superman Action Comics number one.
All right, so Action Comics number one. Action Comics used to be an anthology comic. It had a couple different stories in it. And Action Comics number one, as we all know, was the first appearance of Superman. Superman with a car aloft over his head, smashing it into a rock as criminals run away, one holding his face in the foreground. This is the iconic view of Action Comics number one. Well, to We all know that Action Comics is scarce because of many things. It's age, people, you know, parents threw comics out, comic collections out. Of course, it was just before World War II, so paper drives, things like that. There are a whole lot of reasons and factors that come together to make Action Comics, number one, so very rare already on its own. And it's consistently the highest sold for comic there is. I think just within the last couple years, I believe that was one went for $3 million on eBay. And I know there was another one, I think, at what's the big auction house in England? Sotheby's. I believe one just sold there a couple years ago, and I think it was pretty high as well. But it turns out that there's a story behind another reason why it's so rare. And if you're not ready to vomit like I did, you just turn off the show right now. They ran a contest in the comic. It was a coloring contest. There was a cowboy story in the comic. And the last page of this cowboy story was on the backside of the last page was the first page of Action Comics. And it was the page that you were supposed to color, tear out of Action Comics and send in to Action Comics to see if you won this contest. And at least 25 people entered because someone had also, not only did they show this page with this promo on it, but later on the list of 25 winners. So, you know, yeah. how many kids colored the comic, let alone how many kids colored and tore out that page and sent it in. And I'm just, I watched the video and I'm sad still to this day that I,
yeah, that. I mean, not because of comics, just because of who I am. When my kids have a dollar store coloring book, that says even Spider-Man. You know, it's cheap as crap, right? And they go to rip the page, like, what the hell are you doing? Do not rip crap out of a book, ever. So that whole contest is... I couldn't watch the video. I got about halfway through, like, I can't do it. No, can't do it. It hurt. All right, so things that hurt. Have either of you guys watched Riverdale? What? Good, because that's for, like,
I have not
girls
yet.
Or emo.
Yeah, like, I don't even know what that is.
I mean, do you literally not know what it is? I mean, I'm going to say it's not on your radar, but...
I have...
Okay. Archie Comics, very clean, very upfront, with a high school kid. It's Archie and Jughead and Veronica and Betty. Yeah, and it's just bright pastel colors, and they just get into innocent hijinks and all this jazz. And that's stuff that my parents grew up on, and that's stuff that I grew up on because my parents loved it, and it's clean and innocent and all this jazz. Riverdale is a CW show that launched this year that took that comic, and it is absolutely based on that comic property because Riverdale is the city that it's set in, and made it a, Twin Peaksy, dark.
Twin Peaksy, I believe.
Pretty Little Liars, murdered. High school, angsty, drama, CW show. Looked like trash. But as Chris has pointed out many, many times in this episode, I'm a 40-year-old man. I'm not their demographic. Apparently, he's done well enough. And Greg Berlanti is behind it. Greg Berlanti and Sarah Schechter are the team behind Riverdale. They are now going to be launching the chilling adventures of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, which was also a comic during that time, which was also innocent pastel colors. And if you remember the 90s, it was an innocent sitcom on the afternoons on TV as well.
So when is Casper coming back as a TV show?
Dude, if you make Casper dark and, like, murders the hell out of everybody, I'll watch that.
No, he doesn't have to murder. He just needs to scare the crap out of everybody. I would just watch that.
It's called American Horror on Fox on Friday nights at 8.
Apparently this season's not scaring the crap out of anybody because nobody's watching it.
I watched the first season. I thought the concept of having the same actors doing a whole different thing in the series would be interesting, and it wasn't for me. I didn't care.
I haven't seen any of this season yet because we're watching some other stuff, so we're kind of letting it backlog so we can binge. But I'm a big fan of AHS. My wife and I both.
It's well written, in my opinion.
But
I've heard
I'm a big fan of the anthology stuff anyway. And where the seasons are more, it's more anthology to seasons versus episodes like Twilight Zone. That's what I do like. I do like dealing with completely different stories each season, but there's always underpinnings and there's crossover stuff, whether it be characters or references to previous seasons and stuff. And I do like that. So
back to this innocent comic, because that's what Sabrina the Teenage Witch was just this innocent comic of this half mortal, half witch girl, teenage girl, right? Having to go through, it's a puberty, it's a coming of age puberty type story, just done with magic instead of puberty. And in the 90s, it was Melissa Joan Hart. They did 7 seasons. This reboot is going to be tonally in the vein of Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist. Yeah. If it works, I'm sure there's an audience for it. And
is Melissa Joan Hart going to be on it?
There's no word on that right now.
Because that would be amazing.
That if she became like the mother or something else, or like in the show, I'd watch one episode.
Whatever happened to her, by the way? I assume she must have made so much money doing.
She knew it all. After that point, what else is there to do?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, after that point, she did all of Sabrina, so apparently quite a bit.
It's because of Ferguson. He took that money. And I never watched the television show, but I remember from the late 80s, the movie with the red hair. Yes. It was Pippi Longstocking that got hot when she got older. That's the Sabrina the Teenage Witch that
Which one, by the way, if you've never watched Pippi Longstocking, there's none other like it. You need to watch that movie. Mm. It is a great children's film. Yeah. There's no way they'll ever reboot that well, because it was a cult hit. But there's no other movie like it in the world. You need to watch that film. I'm sure in market research, none of the three of us are the demographic for this show. But this is just an interesting twist precedent that's being set of taking, not that I mind if you take innocence and make it something more real or gritty or whatever, but taking these innocent comics and making them essentially dark horror emo shows.
Well, I feel like the issue with it is going to be much like doing comic shows. There's going to be a point where you're going to play it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess 1 or 2 is probably pretty solid, but if they try to do this much more beyond this, it's going to kind of become sticky, and I think they'll lose a lot of traction.
Oh, so all right. So we've got Archie and we've got Sabrina. So now we're going to get a different Tintin. That's going to be film noir Tintin.
Where he smokes a cigarette. And I put that dog down years ago. Yeah.
When in reality, all this 80s and 90s kid wants is for somebody to finally give Bill Watterson enough money to let them do a television adaptation of Calvin and Hobbes, whether it be live action or cartoon. I don't care. I just want it. That's what I want.
You do the mixed. You do live action kid and adult, but Hobbes is the something's wrong with this kid envisioning the animated Hobbes thing. That would be, it'd be fun though. So one last story before we go, or maybe two, because I see there's a Lego tag here. But Toys R Us ain't us anymore. I saw this explains it all, right? Toys R Us is filing for bankruptcy. In the articles that I read, I don't know if you guys dug any deeper, the protection chapter, I think that's 11. Yeah, unless you restructure, was only going to let them do $4 million of a $5 billion with a B dollar debt. That's pissing on a house fire.
Yeah. Well, I was supposed to essentially get them through the holiday season, I believe, with the open invoices for this year, I think what I was reading.
And they've been really upping their ante on advertising and the emails. And because my kids are in the birthday clubs, I'm getting all kind of extra emails now since the announcement of the bankruptcy and all that jazz. But the best meme I saw was customers are in a panic trying to remember where the hell a Toys R Us location is anyway. Klotz, you seem to be the ardent knowledgeable, even if you don't collect yourself as much, you seem to know a lot about collections. What's wrong with Toys R Us? Why are they? Why do we care if they bankrupt?
The big problem with Toys R Us is that they have not adapted to the modern marketplace. One of my biggest issues with them personally is they're overpriced on everything across the board. If you hit some of the tent pole things that really pull people into a Toys R Us that are also available in other stores, you look at stuff like Lego, you look at, you know, action figures, you look at maybe trading cards like Pokemon and Magic the Gathering, like they might not be your first thought for that, but like they sell it, you know what I mean? You look at all those categories, they're often at least $2 to $3 above their competitor prices in Walmart, in Target, so on and so forth. Obviously it might be different market to market, but in my local market here in upstate New York, they're expensive. Mm-hmm. And needlessly so. And I think that a lot of that is built on, they've been under the assumption that since they're a destination toy store, you're not going to care about the price. But that's just not the truth of modern consumers. Modern consumers are very savvy. You know, that's it. If we look at all the businesses that have gone under in the last, you know, half decade, most of them have not been able to compete with an extremely, you know, value-savvy customer base. People are looking for the deals. One of the best things that Toys R Us had going for it was their credit card. And their credit card gives you basically these awesome rewards. The more you buy, every so often you get like a $5 off coupon, so on and so forth. And one of the reason I have Lego in the notes is because I actually knew that this was happening a few days before it hit even the Toy Power guys' radar, because the Lego community was already talking about it. And they had instituted some changes to their credit card where they took Lego construction sets off of their redemption, the applicable redemption options for the coupons. And they were not pleased. They're like, there's a number of resellers who run online stores, and there's a number of collectors who only have Toys R Us cards strictly to buy Lego products. You know, and some people might not agree with that, because this kind of falls in line with our whole scalpers conversation about, the Nintendo Classic and stuff. But, like, basically, there's a whole market of people who kind of farm, like, Toys R Us, Walmart, Target, and that kind of stuff. They work the deals, and, you know, they either sell things online to people who don't have those stores locally, or they can't get certain things locally, or they farm those deals and buy things cheap and sit on them long term. Because Lego is one of the best things you can invest in. There's been articles on Forbes about how if you invested money in Lego over the market, as long as you're smart about what you're buying for Lego and you don't open it and it's in pristine condition, you'll make twice as much, if not more, money by just investing in Lego. You know what I mean? So, like, the same amount. Just to give a little bit of perspective. So that was a huge, like, red flag to a lot of these people, and they're like, this smells like a forthcoming bankruptcy. And then 3 days later, the article started popping up that they were in talks with a law firm that specializes in bankruptcies, and here we are, you know? So overpricing is an issue. Overbuying is an issue. The whole Toys to Life fad of Skylanders, Disney Infinity, Lego Dimensions, a huge part of their electronics, their video game business was focused on those products. And those products are in a major slump right now. Disney Infinity was performing so badly it got canceled by Disney. Lego Dimensions is performing relatively poorly despite the Lego draw alone being really strong for it, so much so that at E3 there was no talk of the next season of products for Lego Dimensions, which means people feeling like they don't know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? There might be a sequel game coming, there might not. Skylanders, its latest iteration, is less on you having to buy a million different figures and more on you just buying these crystals and stuff and building your own characters in the game. So they're shifting away from having to produce so many toys, and you know, it Toys R Us's deals on that stuff over the years have been bonkers. You know, we're talking about like action figures that you can use in a video game that are, that cost like $15 normal price, and they'll do stuff like buy one get two free, buy two get three free, like crazy deals over the last 18 months to 2 years, which tells me that they've been trying to adapt to the fact that they're just locked in for way too much product. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, but the other thing is, walk through a Toys R Us. Walk through a Toys R Us and tell me how much of the raw percentage of everything you look at in each aisle give a single shit about. Because a lot of it is just like chaff, you know. It's just like it's generic trash. If I'm honest, you know what I mean. When you look at Walmart, when you look at Target, for example, they have decent sized toy sections and they're tight. They do have some of the chaff. You know, there will always be a market for the bargain bin stuff, like the cheapest toys you can get. There will always be people who are like, hey, my kids destroy everything. I'm not buying them fancy Star Wars or Marvel or whatever. I'm buying them, you know, Super Mudja Heroes, you know, whatever, whatever, you know what I mean? And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not hating on those people, but we all know that the toy market is not driven strictly by people buying toys for their kids. It's also very much driven by collectors, which means adults who are smart, they're canny, they're going to look for deals, and they're going to look for, you know, good setups and everything like that. And so when you look at Target, you look at Walmart, they have tight selections, but they're good. They're solid. You know, like Lego in particular, really good. Action figures, really good. You know, they've got all that hot Marvel stuff. They've got all the hot Star Wars stuff. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Amazon is a beast. Go ahead.
Amazon, I think, is the prime, because when you start talking Walmart and Target, their selections are tight, but until fourth quarter and maybe late into the third quarter, they don't give a rat's ass about those toy sections. Yeah. You will go into store weeks and weeks and weeks in a row, and those things will be shopped down, and there won't be any new product, product on there, which is why Toys R Us was able to fill some of that need. In my opinion, the two biggest problems with Toys R Us was easily Babies R Us, and they should have gotten out of the electronics and video games about 10 years ago. And and that floor space that the electronics section is in, that's where they should have put the FAO stuff. I think they should have pushed the FAO branding a little bit more, separated in the store. I like your point about Toys R Us thinking it's a destination toy store. It hasn't been a destination toy store since 1986, because there are actual destination toy stores now, local toy stores that do, you know, like story time and sleepovers for pets and, you know, come in and do arts and crafts, or they have music time every day. There's a reason that it's their local toy stores, and their prices are even more expensive than Toys R Us, but you give them your business because they're constantly doing stuff, bringing your kids into the store, and you're like, hey, this is something I can go do with my kids. And that is a destination toy store, not just a name and Jeffrey and you're just, you know, resting on the laurels of 1973. These guys have made so many missteps, and some of this stuff that they went in full bore and they couldn't adjust and pivot. And it's like I said in the chat, I think at this point, if Toys R Us is going to exist any further into the future as a brand, it needs to be because Amazon swoops in and buys them like they did Whole Foods, knock down the prices, and that is now that's their physical store to do to be in competition now, with
that would work for me. Because here's one thing, the two things that work for me for Toys R Us as a brand. One, my kids, I can kill time with my kids. They like going there. They'll play with the toys, whatever. But when I get over to the, for lack of better words, the collector section and peruse, that's where I got my robot chicken. And that thing is huge, too. It's a good foot tall robot chicken for $15. That I don't find at Walmart, right? Well, because I hate Walmart, I won't go in there. But I don't find it at Target, which I do like. I've gotten a number of other, I never felt like they were collector edition, hard to find, whatever they might have been. I don't know. I'm not a collector. I've never tried to be. But I find stuff like, wow, I've never seen that anywhere else. Here's a Evil Dead, Ash from Evil Dead figure on clearance that, yeah, if I was a collector, I could find it on eBay or Amazon. But just walking through an everyday store, killing time, I'll spend money there because they have cool stuff. The other thing I love about them as a brand is it really amped up with the Pokemon anniversary this past year, 2016, I guess it was. Maybe was it this year? Last year's, last year, yeah. But they were doing events for the kids before that, and they really ramped it up with Pokemon trading sessions. And you come in, you get a free... That's a crappy, cheap Magikarp shiny card, but you get a free card just for showing up. My kids love that. You get coloring pages. You get photo ops with Jeffrey. Lego sponsors where you come in and do a Lego build before the Lego movie came out, and you could build a little car from the show for free. And it's a great interactive and opportunity for the community. And they're, of course, upselling. Hey, if you buy any $30 Pokemon kit right now, you know, or $20 Pokemon kit or Lego kit, you'll also get this exclusive blah, blah, blah. And people are spending money in those instances because of it. But when it comes down to the rest of it?
Yeah, they used to do that a lot more. And it's just kind of slowly faded over the years. Like, I'd say if you go back 10 years was when it really started to take a downturn for doing that kind of stuff. Because they used to have promotions like that all the time. They used to have a lot of exclusives, period. You know what I mean? There's exclusive video games. They're not usually great, but there's, like, I know there's Nintendo games, like Nintendo DS games and stuff like that, that literally say Toys R Us exclusive on them. You know, those were games that were designed just to be sold by Toys R Us stores. Chris, to kind of touch on what you were saying there about the, like, the keeping the shelves stocked and everything, I will say that I think Walmart and Target approach it entirely differently. Target does tend to do a good job of staying stocked all year round, but they do expand for the holidays because I've worked for them before. Mm-hmm. That is hell doing the planogram sets for when all of the back of the store suddenly becomes Toyland. It's rough. Yeah. Because they really do. They usually double, if not triple, the floor space that is devoted strictly to toys. Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, because that is obviously a focus.
And I say that coming from, you know, that ex-collector that still has to go in for my look fix. And, you know, the family makes a weekly trip to Target and probably a bi-weekly trip to Walmart, and I'm constantly in those toy sections, and I will see the same holes in the same toy sections. Transformers is typically bad. Star Wars, for whatever reason, I don't know how you can't... I understand demand, but I also know that they're not selling out that quickly. So when I don't even see...
Who really needs a 3-foot Darth Vader and a Kylo Ren... And the Star Wars.
Yeah, but that's two end caps. That's two end caps in Toys R Us that you know in Target they relegate that not quite to the not where the swim toys are, but in that kind of crap section just before you get to the swim stuff or the sports toys. But I think Target does a better job than Walmart, but I think they both suffer in the restock, and I don't know if it's just that they're not getting it in. I can't imagine that's the case, but I also know that you wouldn't just hold it in the back either. So I don't know if maybe the Kansas market isn't getting the toys, and upstate New York is getting my toys. But I will.
That very well might be the case. I was going to say that is that my market is weird. I was telling the Toy Power guys in chat with them. You know, I was like, I'd offer to look out for some things that they were looking for stateside because I was like, here in upstate New York, I live in an area that has a small city, lower socioeconomic status city. It's not a booming metropolis or anything like that. So there's a couple of people who are like collector minded and profiteer minded for this kind of stuff. But it's not like there's like a whole bunch of mouths to feed as far as that goes. So here... You know, when a new shipment of, like, X figure comes in and there's 5 or 10 of them in the case or whatever, they might not get bought out here. Whereas, depending on your market, it could be completely different. I mean, big metro areas, you know, they might only get 10 of the new, you know, Luke Skywalker figure for Episode 8 or whatever as an example. Those might get bought out in the first couple days, you know, because they'll just have the sheer traffic alone. I do know that most of these companies allocate based on sales, so if you sell out of something, they'll send you more, generally, if they can, if they have the supply. But a lot of times, product gets stuck in stores, too. And that's ultimately my big point with Toys R Us, is Toys R Us is a dumpster full of toys. Like, there are how many aisles are literally stickered clearance from front to back in most Toys R Us stores, especially this time of year? You know, you're talking, we're about to go into Q4, we're about to go into the holiday hype, You know what I mean? They're about to rework, you know, every retail store is about to do a major planogram, you know, overhaul, and you're going to see all the fresh stuff for holiday 2017 coming in. Some of it good, some of it bad. But no, I hear you on what you were saying about Target and Walmart, though, because I've been frustrated, too. Like, I, when Episode 7 and then Rogue One came out, I wanted to get the Revel models that came out, the Snap Kits, because they look really good. They're very affordable. They're only like $20.
Oh, and those Star Destroyers, they snap. Light sounds.
Yeah, I wanted to get those, and like we'd go into our local stores here, and I couldn't find them. Like, I couldn't find, like, an X-Wing. I couldn't find, like, I couldn't find a Poe's X-Wing. I couldn't find a TIE Fighter. I was like, this is obnoxious. You know what I mean? This is, like, this should be really easy to find.
Well, then you and I should start an exchange program, because that is stuff that I can find in abundance here. But I can't find, I can't find black figures. I can't find 3.5-inch figures.
Whoa,
I can't find.
Whoa, Chris.
Oh, what? Black Series. Excuse me. The Black Series figures. Is that better?
Urban series. Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about that is that's where Toys R Us is ultimately going to fail, is because do you know where the exchange club for that is? It's called Amazon and eBay.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's where people are turning to get their toy fix.
Yeah.
They're going to order on Amazon because they're going to get it cheap from somebody who's getting shipped cases. They're going to turn to eBay because they're going to get, you know, when somebody runs into the X figure that they really want to have, they're going to pay a couple extra bucks to have it, but they're going to have it. You know what I mean?
But you know what? It's been a while since I've been on their site, but am I wrong? Don't they do the same thing that Walmart does and third-party vendors can sell on their site? So you go to Walmart and you can find a figure
Toys
that you
Us, I don't know about that though.
I think Toys R Us does.
Maybe.
But I mean, all that to me, when you already have the stigma of being the high price guy on the block and you go in there and you can pay collector prices to some third party guy off of their website, it doesn't really help your image at all.
Well, the crazy part is their online store is linked to eBay.
Mm. Oh, is
you can
it?
Go yeah. pull up Toys R Us on eBay. Yeah. That's wild to me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That you can order stuff from Toys R Us and it's just through eBay. And they just send it to you their normal way. Mm. You know what I mean? They basically just turned eBay into another sales platform for themselves. I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, it's hard to say without seeing their metrics. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would love to see Toys R Us exist into the future, but they're not going to survive. I'm sure that they felt superior once KB closed down and then FAO Schwartz, and they bought it. They were able to buy out FAO Schwartz, and like, hey, we're finally on the top. We have no more competitors. And not in, you know, toy specialty stores, you have no more competitors, but there's plenty of big fish still swimming out there ready to gobble your ass up. And I don't know. I would love to see it stick around, but I'd also love to see the toy run come back. But Nickelodeon ain't beating down their door anymore, are they?
I think ultimately this is kind of in the vein of like why Circuit City went under.
That's the problem.
And why even Best Buy is a well-known, you know, consumer electronics outlet, and even they've had to tighten their belt in recent years, and it's because there's not a strong market for big box stores anymore. Unless you're the department store that is literally everything, the whole kit and caboodle, like a Walmart or a Target. It's a tough gig these days because you have no way to absorb, you know, the loss when you have a slow season, and slow seasons are abundant, especially when your specialty like toys and electronics.
So the world's changing, and you got to flow and change with it. And
goddamn millennials!
But speaking of quarter four and planograms, Paul Klotz is available to run all that for you. So hit him up.
No, I'm not. I'm good. I don't need a seasonal job.
Bots@show.com is where you can reach him. So, all right. We're going to get out of here. And we've given lots of love to Toy Power tonight. Check them out. We're working on their website for them. And you can find them at Giant Size Team Up and on all your podcast catchers everywhere, iTunes, Stitcher, blah, blah, blah. So Toy Power, awesome, good show. Check it out. Hit us up with your emails, especially if you hate what Chris Wisdom says. BTP@GiantSizeTeamUp.com. So you can do that. Be part of our community. We're on Twitter. I'm at RuckoutOfPod. Klotz, where are you at?
I am at SoapboxGSTU.
Wisdom is in all things Wisdom?
Well, you can look that up, but my Twitter handle, I believe, is at @ChristophWisdom.
There you go. That's going to be it for this week. Tune in next week to hear Chris say,
this is why I'm upset about Batman versus Superman.
Because Toys R Us is in it.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.